Welcome to Placeholder Podcast. I'm Kaylee Fretz. This week on the show, we have additional details on the merger to end all mergers. The fallout from this one is going to be enormous, rippling across the entire sport, and we will bring you up to speed. Plus, we've got Alex Dowsett's spicy new book and a whole bunch else. Johnny Long, tell me one interesting thing about yourself.
No, I refuse. I knew when you cut us off that discussion, you were going to bring that. And I'm now a tax-paying adult who doesn't have to do what he's told. I'm no longer at school. I am, what's the word when you don't sign up for war? Conscientiously objecting to the interesting fact.
Ronan McLaughlin, do you have an interesting fact about Johnny?
About Johnny? No, not really. Is there anything interesting about him?
Not really. Oh God, that's crushing.
Kit Nicholson, do you know anything about Johnny?
Do I know anything about Johnny? The parameters are diminishing. I don't know. He's quite tall. Hanger. Johnny owns clothes.
Yeah,
that's something I know about him.
Significantly taller than he looks, I think, is the one thing we can say about Johnny.
I have an interesting fact about Johnny. He stands to make thousands in profit on an ancient van that he currently has.
And you were the last person to ride in, Ronan, because it broke down the very next day.
I thought you were going to say it's been done. Johnny has a Ford Transit van. It's one of the only vehicles that has appreciated 100% in the time that he's owned it. Appreciated, yep. Not depreciated.
Until it broke down.
No, even now.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's a fantastic fact.
I don't know anything about four-wheeled vehicles.
Great fact. I'm going to continue on with the show here. We do, of course, want to thank some of our lifetime members. Mike Anderson, Kyle Weck, David Havill, David McGowan, and Stephen Hopper. Thank you all so much for being lifetime members of Escape Collective. We appreciate you. You make all this possible. And for that, we are endlessly thankful. I also want to do a quick shout out to Murray, a friend of a friend, an Aussie in Bali, I believe. And it's your birthday on October 4th. And so happy birthday, Murray. I do know that you're a member and a frequent listener.
Wow, he's in Bali and he got a podcast shout out. Doesn't get much better than that, does it?
Let's get into today's show. As I said in the little intro, we're gonna jump into this merger stuff pretty quickly here. This is the biggest story in cycling right now. It's the biggest story in cycling for the last couple of weeks. It is the thing around which a whole bunch of other stories are swirling, right? The Roglic, where will he end up? Where will Remco end up? All these things are tied together. They're almost in sequence, like dominoes, right? The first one to fall is going to impact where everything else ends up landing. And so we want to update you on what's going on. And in particular, well, we got to update Kit on what's going on, because Kit was off on holiday last week and has no idea what's happening. That's actually a bit of an overstatement. But we are going to use that little trope to explain what is happening right now. So it's the middle of the week. Of the week of October 2nd. Johnny, where do we stand as of recording this podcast? Because I can almost guarantee that the second we hit stop on this, something major is going to happen, unfortunately. But we can bring people up to speed, at least to right now.
So the crux of the matter is that Jumbo-Visma needs sponsorships going forward. So they are looking for additional partners because they've got a big budget now and there's money dropped out. On the other side, Patrick Lefevre kind of wants to cash out of the team that he's managed and mismanaged for years. And the only way he can really do that, because how do you sell a cycling team? Well, the thing he's managed to figure out he can sell is the long-term sponsorship agreements he's got to Jumbo-Visma. So rather than everyone's calling it a merger, but it now looks like it's going to be a takeover, because what it looks like is that Jumbo-Visma are effectively buying Soudal Quickstep and their contracts and stuff, and it looks like not many of their riders are going to actually go over. At the moment, it looks like about six when there are about 23 contracted to next year. So that's bad news for the riders. You imagine for the team staff, a lot of them are not going to be carried over because You can only have 30 riders in a World Tour team. You don't need two sets of everything. Primoz Roglic is off. Looks like, well, he's definitely out the door. It looks like he's on his way to Bora Hansgrohe, which is great. And I think everyone's very excited about that. And that frees up a lot of budget because I think their Jumbo-Visma are getting compensated for that. Remco Evenepoel, it's unsure at the minute whether he's going to this new Jumbo-Visma Soudal thing or if he maybe he's going to Ineos Grenadiers. Because these riders from Soudal Quickstep, when that team gets disbanded, they get to sign new contracts. And Remco Evenepoel is probably one of the only ones who will actually have a real big choice of where he goes.
So just this morning, we had a statement come in from the UCI on this specifically. Because one of the problems is that, you know, until Quickstep is formally disbanded, the riders actually can't sign contracts, right? So what's the solution to that, according to the UCI?
So the UCI in their statement, it's a weird one. They're like sort of getting out in front of the whole thing. And I assume they're saying different things behind closed doors, but this is how they're deciding to communicate in public. And they're effectively saying that there's an October 15th deadline for World Tour team registration where there are certain things that need to be ironed out. You need to show your bank guarantee. There are all the different criteria to show that you're a functioning organization. And if it's not sorted before that point, then a press release goes out on October 19th, which lets you know all of the riders that are signed up for next year or that have managed to renew, you know, because you sign like 3-year World Tour deals. So if at that point this new team isn't on the list, then riders are free to sign with whoever they want. But it's a weird one to point out because you can imagine a bunch of the big Jumbo-Visma riders are just hoping that that team carries on. And for all the riders who are going to be left out of the merger, they're left out regardless, right?
Well, it's kind of critical because the riders, I think you could probably pick the six or so riders that we're expecting to move from Quickstep across to Jumbo-Visma. And for all the rest of the riders currently under contract with Soudal Quickstep, they can't actually seek out and sign contracts elsewhere to have a job for next season until their contracts are null and void with Soudal as they stand. So they're in a position where they know they don't have a team for next year and also at the same time can't actually sign a new contract to give themselves employment for another year. And you know, the longer they have to wait, the less chance there is of signing.
Yeah, because other teams are going to start filling up or already have filled up, right? So we've been doing a fair amount of reporting on this for the last couple of weeks. On all sort of all angles of this, broke some news on a couple fronts last week. What we're hearing this week is of essentially desperate agents, particularly agents of these Quickstep riders. Now, it's important to keep in mind here that, like, these agents have riders across lots and lots of different teams, but the riders that these agents are currently trying to find homes for is the Quickstep side, right? And which really reinforces the idea that the Jumbo sort of roster is probably going to remain mostly the same, and it's mostly the Quickstep side that is going to essentially get left out to dry. And that's just the riders, of course. There's also all the team staff. There's you know, medical staff, soigneurs, mechanics. Like, there's a whole big group of people that is basically just going to be left with nothing in the next probably month or so. And again, the agents are, according to our sources, sort of increasingly desperate to find spots for a lot of these riders. It's going to be really, really difficult. And I'm thinking of, like, there's a young American, Luke Lamperti, who literally signed with Quickstep like a month ago. And where is he going to end up, right? Like, there's a million of those. Not a million. That's an exaggeration. There are 23 of those examples, plus all the staff, plus all the mechanics, plus all, everybody else. It's a bit of a mess.
They're 100% agree. And obviously the riders who are with Jumbo and are better positioned, they have a job for next season. But also, if you had just signed with Jumbo, if you were, I don't know, re-signing, or if you're Matteo Jorgensen or Ben Tullett or one of those riders who is set to join for Jumbo next year, you were sold something and you signed up for something, and that is entirely different now. And also, if you're, I don't know, if you're Casper Asgreen, who I guess is probably moving across, or if you're Wout van Aert, both those riders are going for the same races, and both have won the same races in the past couple of seasons. Maybe we should take a second to think of any positives that might come out of this. Oh no, wait, okay, that's it. We've considered the positives, that's it.
Patrick Lefebvre gets to cash in and go and sit on a beach somewhere. But I mean, that's a difficult one as well, because it's his thing. He's put the time and years and decades into it. But then at the same, and like, I guess as an owner and manager and whatever, you have a duty to your staff and stuff like that. But then it's like his business. So I don't know how. It's not just black and white of like, ah, screw this guy, because that's just like kind of what everyone thinks every time he does something, right?
I mean, I think we can kind of say that, but it's a unique set of circumstances that is pulling all this together, right? It's the fact that we've got one team with an owner that wants to get out, and Bakala is the same way, which he owns, he's the Czech billionaire that owns like 80% of Quickstep. So he also appears to not really be interested in staying super involved anymore. And you've got Lefebvre who wants to get out, and you've got a team that is suddenly has this enormous budget shortfall, right? Like, that's the other thing that we're hearing, is that the sort of budgetary cliff, the cliff that was coming for Jumbo-Visma, was quite serious. And it's what led to this, kind of extreme solution. Right? I mean, this is an extreme solution. This is a solution that, instead of just finding another big sponsor, which is what Jumbo-Visma would have wanted to do, that would have been plan A, right? They are instead going to pull this other entire team in. Lots of people losing jobs, lots of bad stuff happening. This was not plan A. This is like a emergency measure to keep the Jumbo juggernaut going, basically.
But part of that also doesn't add up for me, is because if you're taking six riders from Quickstep, you're taking the highest earners, probably. You're taking the best riders, I'm assuming.
But maybe they're not. Maybe they're not. Like, are they going to take Alaphilippe?
Well, I assume
he's probably the second or third highest earner.
I'm assuming he's going to Team Total Energies.
That would make the most sense.
I still can't square the round peg or whatever you want to say about taking on more high profile riders from another team with one of their sponsors and filling your budget gap that way. There's a part of that that doesn't add up to me. Maybe I'm missing something.
Go ahead, Kate.
But so when I first started reading about this, and there was a lot to get through, the first thing that came to mind with the talk of mergers and also just the two teams that are named, Jumbo-Visma and Sudal-Quickstep. Yeah, Sudal-Quickstep hasn't had a vintage couple of years, but they're still regarded as one of the, let's say, top five most successful teams, maybe top three. And so to see those two teams together, it was almost a sort of thing where I was thinking, is this not something that would actually be bad for the sport? And even if there are benefits to it, then is this somewhere that UCI would step in? It reminded me of, you guys know I'm big into movies. It reminded me of the massive Hollywood antitrust case in the late 40s, when all the studio system was so ridiculously, dominant. And it was vertically integrated, and everyone, one studio would own the cinemas and all the makeup houses, and they'd own everything. So they were the only ones who got any money. And that antitrust case broke it all up as a non-compete sort of, solution. And so, like you're saying, Ronan, if you've got, let's say, Roglic and Remco, they're still under contract with their current teams. But it's been you've got at least four good GC riders on one team. You've got Wout van Aert, you've got Casper Asgreen. Apparently Wout van Aert wants Yves Lampert to go along. You've got Christophe Laporte. You take a bunch of riders along to one race so that you definitely win it, but then you've got four riders on that team who were teammates to somebody who won it. And that's just a bit like, I mean, well done, good, pat yourselves on the back. But when it's a sport, you can see where, from a business perspective, it makes sense, but it's just a bit unsavory from a sporting side.
Yeah, I mean, it brings into question of what should be done to make the sport more economically sustainable, because like as great as Jumbo-Visma are, you don't want them sort of lurching from season to season with this huge budget, which ensures they win at the expense of their competition. And now it seems at the expense of the health of the sport. Because, if you have one team or one competitor that's miles dominant, that's less good for, attention in the audience. And everyone's now going to turn eventually to discussion of budget caps and salary caps and how to bring it all into sort of a sense of normalcy. But I think this is a
none of which will ever happen.
No, but because it's all too convoluted and there's not an equitable sharing of the sport and who makes money where, and there is just, you know, an inherent risk built into it all. But you shouldn't have these huge, like, you shouldn't have to then like absorb another team to make your team. What are they just going to do it again next year if then Sudan Quickstep decide not to do it and then eventually there'll be the only ones left? I don't know.
That you kind of hadn't, the way it struck me was that it's seems to me like more of a power play than a necessity for either team to survive. Perhaps it was the management at Jumbo-Visma, or I don't know what the parent company for that team is called, but the management at that team happened to poach Sudal somehow or whatever, and then Lefebvre thought, well, you know, now's the time to get out or something to that effect, and it snowballed from there. I don't know, but it seems to me like maybe the success of 2023 going to Jumbo's heads and them thinking, well, 3 Grand Tours is enough, we also want to win every single race we start in 2024 and just
and eat teams.
So the budget shortfall, according to our sources, was pretty significant, 20-25 million, somewhere in that range, which, to be clear, is like, that's the entire budget of teams in the bottom third of the World Tour, right? So that's the size of the hole. That's the size of the hole we were talking about. And that's, of course, with Jumbo leaving, right? Like, that was the original. This is all caused by Jumbo the saying that they were not going to renew. And so they, you know, the team needed to find a new solution. So 25 million is a big old hole, and they would have to fill it. And again, when I'm talking about sort of the budgetary cliff that was coming, they've got a lot of very expensive riders. It's a big part of the reason why they have been so dominant. They have an enormous budget, you know, somewhere in the 45 to 55 million euro range, probably. So I think they needed the money. I genuinely think they really needed the money, and I don't think this was any sort of power play. You know, let's go steal the best riders from Quickstep. I don't think that was the original idea here. The original idea here was, we need 25 million. They're going to get somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 for Roglic's contract. Plus, they don't pay him anymore, which is 2-ish a year. So you've got 7 in 2024, 9 through 2025. That closes a bit of that gap, but there's still a fair amount more, and I think that's where Sudal comes in. Yes, they're going to bring on a number of relatively expensive riders, but they're not, I don't think, going to bring on the most expensive riders. And if you're negotiating with Quickstep riders right now, you're in a position of strength. Right?
That sucks.
None of them are getting pay raises coming across here.
Are you negotiating, though? Because you're inheriting their contract. So the contract as it currently stands, you cannot reduce it or...
Well, it depends how it shakes out, doesn't it? Might,
But the other way that I would be trying to work this if I was Jumbo is, okay, those contracts are null and void. We're just essentially moving the sponsor over. And... I mean, it's what's going to happen to all the riders that don't come, right? So all the riders that don't come over to Jumbo-Visma, their contracts are going to be null and void as of
October
19th.
Yeah, they're going to take big pay cuts.
Or they're either going to have to get paid out, or, like, this is all the things. I mean, we're talking about this, again, we're talking about this on Tuesday, like it's 100% going to happen. I am still not convinced that it is 100%. I think it's close, but there are so many things that need to be worked out here, and in particular things like these other riders, the other 20-something riders that technically have contracts that have to be fulfilled. The UCI statement today reiterated this fact. If the UCI is going to bend its own rules and say that these contracts don't have to be fulfilled, that has massive ramifications on the rest of the sport. And if they do have to be fulfilled, where is all that money coming from? I think that this is still quite a complicated thing to finalize this week.
And coincidentally, just in those numbers that you're throwing about there, but I think it was according to I can't remember who it was according to. Anyway, the estimated budget for Sudal Quickstep this year is actually 25 million euro. So
jeez,
That right. proves your theory there. You're it's no longer a conspiracy. It's actual sort of fact at this point. The other thing I was going to mention was, I guess we'll have our answer either way when we know the new team's name. If it is Amazon Visma, then there was no need for Sudal's money. They just wanted to dominate the sport.
Well, the Amazon thing is, not confirmed, and who knows what's true at the minute, but one of the things that we've heard is that it's actually not cash, it's for exposure or brand tie-ins and all that sort of nonsense.
Get vouchers.
But the whole thing, it's like, if the UCI do allow leeway behind closed doors, whatever, it's just all like very Wall Street, like too big to fail and sort of one thing eating another, and it's not, like, we know it's not healthy from other things, and it's just sort of the money running rampant. And none of it feels good. And the people who, like, in the new structure, Bakal is going to have a bunch of the shares. Richard Plugger is going to have a bunch of the shares. Another guy on the Jumbo Visma board is going to have a bunch of the shares. So they're all fine, whatever happens. But the people who lose out are the ones at the bottom of the food chain, the Swanies, the mechanics. And that's not, well, in my mind, and how I like the sport being, and probably many other people, that's not how I want it to work, you know?
Especially as we understand that the world, unlike in the past when we've seen World Tour, world team status transferring to someone else, we understand that that's not going to happen. There's no status up for grabs. So next year, if this does go through, there will be one less world tour team, which is good for the pro teams that want to ride the big races, but it's not good for, you know, that means that those, usually when you've got a team folding, it means that there's another team stepping into the breach, but this team is literally just going to disappear. Mm-hmm. And so all those people, all those mechanics and co, you know, they're going to be grappling for jobs that aren't there.
Yeah, sucks.
Sucks.
Could I add a silver lining? Still vague because we don't know. But let's just say it does happen, and we know that Roglic is leaving, and we assume, given a number of rumours, my favourite one being from Geraint Thomas, that Remco Evenepoel may be going elsewhere as well, which would mean that next year's Tour de France, we'd have the four, in quotation marks, best Grand Tour races on separate teams, which is great. A good thing.
Roglic revenge tour, and Evenepoel probably help him out. And then Sepkus will have to decide, does he go with his head or his heart? It's going to be mental.
I can't remember exactly when, but at some point during the final week of the Vuelta, I thought to myself, you know what, as bad as total domination is, having one team win all three Grand Tours and then place all three riders on each step of the podium at the Vuelta, or fill the podium at the Vuelta, at some point I just wanted to see it happen there and then, so that it was done and that dominance could be finished with and we could move on and have a normal season again next year. Somehow we've moved only 2 weeks further into the year and it looks like it could be even worse next year.
Yes and no. I like the idea of having the Grand Tour sort of real contenders all spread out. Yeah. I do think the classics could be a bit womp womp. But you know, Tadej Pogacar is still on a different team. Mathieu van der Poel is still on a different team. Like there's still some very, very, there's some exceptional riders that are not going to be riding for Jumbo Visma. And you have to imagine that Jumbo, like the rest of the peloton, not going to be huge fans, right?
No.
They're going to have friends who lost jobs. They're gonna just sort of balk against the dominance in the same way that we have. They're not going to have a whole lot of friends in the peloton, and that can have an effect over the course of a year, right? Little moments where they're not going to be given any room. I'm not sure it's going to matter when you've got that squad, but if we're looking for silver linings, I think that is the only one around a very, very dark cloud.
There's a curious extra story to this though, or strand, in that UAE Team Emirates is still the top ranked UCI team of the year, which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever because they haven't won a
UCI
Grand Tour.
UCI rankings are ridiculous.
Yes, I mean, it's a reflection on the UCI rankings being completely hopeless and probably something to get into, but
So what you're saying is any merger talk and whether that's going to happen, let's just put a pause on that until we figure out how and why UAE Team Emirates are the number one ranked team. And once we've sorted that out, then everything else can follow. I think that makes sense, yeah.
All right. We've discussed this enough for this week. By the time you listen to this, hopefully nothing enormous has changed.
Hopefully everything has changed and it's not happening at all. Yeah. And we've two teams still exist and everybody still has a job and the world is normal.
We've all woken up from a bad dream.
I kind of doubt it. Let's take a quick break. Welcome back, everybody. Let's chat about Alex Dowsett's spicy cookbook. Johnny? Wait, Ronan.
No, not me.
Tell me about
Ronan
it.
Ronan did.
Yeah, I did. Sorry, did you see the... I actually did my job just to make sure that you know I did my job, and I wrote the intro for you. You just didn't read it. I don't need you to read it. I read just it? Need to point that out. No, you don't need to read it because it's probably terrible, but just to point out that I did that for you, you just choose not to use it.
The autobiography is called Bloody Minded, My Life in Cycling. It is a candid insight into Dowsett's time in the pro peloton, the teams he raced with, some of the personalities he encountered along the way, and the trials and tribulations of growing up with hemophilia to become the only elite professional athlete on the planet with a bleeding disorder. And more interestingly, he just shits all over a bunch of the companies that sponsored him and teams that he rode for and all sorts of other interesting things. So, Ronan.
Right up until that point, you were making it sound like an ad. So,
yeah.
I liked it. It was a good intro.
Yeah, well, that was the best I could come up with on such short notice. I read the book. I'm going to say I read it. I actually listened to it. Because you can listen on times 1.5 or whatever you call it, playback speed, and it's just more efficient when you're trying to do it for work.
Does Dowsett read it?
No.
Is he the one reading it? No.
No.
Snoop Dogg read it? You can get AI to read anything now, right?
Mm.
Did you know that Spotify is going to start, you could listen to, not this podcast because we're not big and important enough, but at some point they're going to use AI so you could listen to this podcast in Spanish.
You can also listen to it in English.
It takes our actual voices and puts them into Spanish.
I've always wanted to speak Spanish.
Anyway, sorry, that's a bit of an aside. Ronan, tell me about the book.
I really enjoyed Alex Dowsett's book, and in terms of autobiographies and sports people and cyclists in particular, they usually tend to follow a bit of a trend where it's like, when I was 6, I did this. When I was 7, I did that. When I was 8, I didn't go to school and started cycling. And there was just none of that. It was like first chapter, first page, straight into our record, which massively pleased me. But there was just a real good sort of his upbringing and his sporting endeavors were sort of perfectly interspersed, I thought, throughout the book, and it just made for a real interesting read throughout. And you obviously there was actually there was a few pretty good anecdotes in it, including Tony Martin's weird eye training thing that he used to do in the morning. He would stick a piece of blue tack to an end of a pen and do something to train his eyes to try and stop crashing.
So weird.
So that was interesting. it was actually really refreshing just listening to, it is Dowsett. It's not Dowsett's voice, but listening to him talk about being a pro rider. And I think there seems to be this sort of, I don't know if it's peer pressure or if they're definitely, or just genuinely sick of it or what, but there's so many pro riders who it seems like the thing to do is to hate on cycling and not be a fan and all that. And Dowsett doesn't come across in that way at all. He seems to be a huge fan of the sport, has a heck of a lot of respect for it. He talked about when he made the Champs-Élysées, when he finished the tour, I think it was 2019, and he happened to come onto the Champs at right beside Peter Sagan, who was sort of mocking the whole thing and making fun of entering Paris and all that. And Dowsett said he just backed down the bunch away from Sagan because he just wasn't going to have Sagan spoil this moment for him, which I thought was really genuine. He was also surprisingly candid about a couple of people who he encountered throughout his career, like Max Giandri, Bradley Wiggins, Dave Brailsford. They all got a bit of a touch within the book. Wiggins in both ways sort of, I think he didn't actually describe him as an enigma, but you sort of got that impression that he was as enigmatic to Alex, who was his teammate at one point and roommate at one point, as Wiggins is to us from the outside. And then went into an interesting level of detail on his time at Israel Premier Tech, which was fascinating also. And yes, that wasn't a very rosy experience for him either, particularly re-signing with the team for an extra 2 years following his Giro win. And he's very candid about that as well. Given all that, he was surprisingly on-candid, I would say, on-candid, if that makes sense, about the likes of Alejandro Valverde and other teammates he's had. I think he referenced Valverde's doping past at one point or so, but I would have thought that would have been an easier target if you were looking to, you know, mention that in a few places. I would have thought Valverde would have been the easiest target, but not so much. And then I think the thing that really struck me about the book was just, you know, understanding and learning more about, you know, his battle is not the right word, but living with hemophilia, which obviously Alex has had since birth, and not just himself living with it, but the sort of the anguish and that his parents had to go through growing up, and how difficult that was for them, especially his mom. That really struck a chord with me as well. Like it was hard to listen to at parts, but also it was just, you know, you just couldn't credit those parents enough for the life that they ensured that Alex was going to have growing up. Because at the time, it wasn't that cycling or football or whatever sport Alex wanted to do, whatever time, was sort of frowned upon for hemophiliacs. It was like actively sort of, his parents would have been told, he cannot do these things, or he cannot play in the playground, or I think he mentions at one point, here's a wheelchair for Alex just in case he needs it, you know, with the sort of understanding would be that he would need it at some point. And obviously he didn't. So, it was a really good lesson, really good read.
Was there anything else about Movistar? I think that was always one of the more intriguing things, is like how he fit into that whole thing.
Yeah, he seemed to have a lot of time for Movistar. You could tell that he was obviously frustrated at times, given Dowsett's sort of tech approach to time trialing and marginal gains of philosophy and all that. But at the same time, you got the feeling that, you know, I think for a lot of his time there, felt at home is the right way to put it, but he certainly felt welcomed and he, you know, was given opportunities that he wasn't going to get at Sky, and that was made clear. So that was kind of why he moved on. They fully supported him for the R record, and he sort of delves into how much that meant to them. But then there was a couple of funny moments as well. I think he mentioned the Tirreno Adriatico team time trial the first year he was on the squad, and he had just come from like Team Sky, where every I was dotted and every T was crossed. And then he went to Movistar, and they had, I think I'm right in saying that they had like a full gas, maybe 2 hour recon in the morning or something like that. But they rode far too hard, and then he was told he had to start his warm up, and he was like, "I'm already cooked. How am I going to start a warm up now?" And then they were on the team bus, and Eusebio Unza was like, so like the general manager of the team was on the bus, and they were like bickering with the riders back and forth about which overshoes they were going to use, and then at the last minute, it just so happened that actually everybody ended up in the right overshoes, and then they rocked up to the start line, or like it sounded like they crashed onto the start line, and a team chaos, and on the actual start line, somebody asked the question over the radio, what order are we going to go on, and they decided that they were going to send Visconti first because he was from the region or something to that effect. There was just no real rhyme or reason to it. It was just very much the opposite of Team Sky, but then they rocked up and
bring it back.
And the key point was they finished second in team time draw behind Quickstep and beat Sky, and he was like, it really struck a chord with him, because he was like, they don't have all the science end of it, but the riders just know how to deliver the perfect team time draw in terms of effort produced. So yeah, wow. Really good. I thought
that's cool.
Bike racers, right? Like they just, yeah, good racers. I like it. I'm going to pick up the book, I think. It sounds like an interesting one.
What I like about this book is that there is actually a really good reason for it to be written, which is so rarely the case with sports biographies. You know, he's got a really interesting story, and yeah, so I look forward to getting into it.
Yeah, 100% second that.
Did he write it, or was it a ghost written thing? Because I know he's written a fair amount in the past.
He didn't write it. No, he got help. But I don't know to what extent.
Yeah.
Have any of you read?
I think it would be highly surprising if he sat down and wrote a book, you know, months after finishing a pro career. That would be exceptionally noteworthy.
Have any of you read Sagan's book?
No.
That wouldn't bother.
No.
I don't bother with most of them, to be perfectly honest, because Kit's right that a lot of them, they don't really have a reason to be written other than, like, you were a pro athlete. Like, oh, wow, you were born with a really high VO2 max. Congratulations.
That's a great explanation. Books is merch.
Yeah.
To that point, it's not the same, obviously, but I could just resonate so much with especially what Alex's parents or Dice's parents were going through, given my daughter has a severe nut allergy, and just the chances that your daughter, or in their case, their son, could go out to school someday and something catastrophic could happen. I'm not even going to go into what could happen, but that part of the book just, and every time that came up, just really, really struck a chord with me. And I thought his parents were very inspirational in how they dealt. Like, literally, a fall on the playground could have had untold consequences for Dowsett when he was a kid. So how they did that, I'm not entirely sure.
There you go.
I think their thing was, and I wasn't going to get into it because I don't want to not do it justice. You need to read the book to understand it. But their thing was that, you know, he's living with this thing. He's not going to live by this thing. He's, you know, especially, I think he got a bit of kickback at times for potentially taking unnecessary risks and potentially being a draw on the health service and stuff. And his and his consultant's opinion were, you know, when you're descending down a mountain, it's not hemophilia that is the risk.
Yeah.
If you're doing 100K an hour in the Tour de France descent, it's the cycling that's the risk. It's not. And there's so many positive that actually offset the risk. From being healthier, from being lighter, from being fitter, from all of those other things that it wasn't even really a question.
I enjoyed this book corner.
I did. I
don't enjoyed, read it again.
Read more.
Excellent book report, Ronan. I think next time we need. Did you guys, when you did book reports as kids, did you have to build dioramas?
I don't really remember doing book reports.
No, I don't remember. Doing
never did a book report. Don't know what dioramas are.
So you're just writing about the book that you read.
So, like, for example, in fourth grade, I would read a book about dinosaurs or whatever. And my book report, where I would have to sort of explain what would have happened in the book or what I learned about dinosaurs, would have to include a diorama, including, usually made out of a shoebox, including little dinosaurs that I had made.
To prove that you read the book.
Next time, to prove you'd read the book. And, you know, you had to, like, build something. And so next time we have a book report, I think we need a diorama, is what I'm saying.
Perfect for a podcast. I need a little shoebox
with a little Alex Dowsett in it, doing something, riding his bike up a mountain.
It just seems important to remind you at this time that we are in an audio medium. the listeners wouldn't actually see the diorama, so perhaps we should focus our time and attention elsewhere.
Possibly. All right, we're going to wrap this segment up. We're going to head over to Weekly Pain. But let's take a quick break.
Hey there, I'm Dane Cash, and I'm taking the opportunity provided by this little break in the action of the podcast you're listening to right now to tell you that if you like bike racing and you want some pretty serious analysis, you should check out the Pretty Serious Bike Racing Podcast. Every week, I chat with my co-host Cosmo Catalano and a few other extremely talented analysts, and we break down all the big stories in the pro racing scene. You hear from former road pros like Abby Mickey, Ruth Winder, and Ronan McLaughlin, and from insightful cycling journalists like Kaylee Fretz, Johnny Long, and Kit Nicholson. We try to dive deep into the racing action to talk tactics, Smart moves by some riders, questionable decisions by others, unheralded members of the pro peloton, and a lot more. And despite my best efforts to keep us very serious, you can rely on Cosmo and the rest of our crew to keep the serious level down just to where it's just pretty serious, the perfect amount of serious. You can find the pod on the main Escape Collective podcast feed, and we hope you'll check it out. All right, back to the show.
All right, welcome back. It is time for this week's Weekly Pain. We're making some changes, actually, to the Weekly Pain segment. Johnny, what are we doing? What's coming up?
So starting from next week, we're going to involve the listeners, the members, in the Weekly Pain quiz. You know, as much as we all like beating Ronan McLaughlin every week at whatever quiz question gets asked and watching Brutal. Him sort of, yeah, dying a silent Watch death in his office. We want to get a listener on the show competing against one of us in the regular Weekly Pain quiz segment. So, you know, they'll be against one of us three. I think we'll do like a preliminary round to decide who it's going to be and then go head to head against the member. The question will be like one of the regular ones we do, like a back and forth of naming a Tour de France rider whose name begins with B, or the Price is Right rules for whatever Kaylee comes up with. But we're also going to make it winner stays on. So if you survive, if you win, then you survive to the next week. And so the idea is you can build your own sort of dynasty, and your like win record will be logged in the Weekly Pain Hall of Fame, which nearly rhymes. It's really close to rhyming, but it just doesn't. And there'll be prizes. So if you get one victory, you can have a shout out and say whatever you want on the show, like after your win. If you get to three, we think we're going to do like a t-shirt or a bucket hat or something. I haven't cleared any of these prizes with Kaylee or anyone, by the way. I've just written them down the list. Five victories is a year's free membership. And then 10 victories will like make you a crown or something.
I like making a crown. So yeah, we're going to pull in members. We'll mention this on Discord. We'll find a way for you guys to get in touch. We'll select a listener at random. They'll be completely random every week, unless you win, in which case you stay on week after week after week, potentially putting us to shame over and over and over again.
We obviously record at a set time every week. If the winner from the previous week can't make it at that time, are they forfeiting their place, or how does that work?
I think we'll try and be accommodating within reason.
Yeah, we can pull some magic of radio from for timing, you know, magic of podcast really specifically, because live radio would be a separate thing entirely. Yeah, a little magic of editing. We will make every effort to pull people in if they are reigning champions.
Kind of like everything that the listener has just heard, we haven't even said yet because we're recording this segment before we do the rest of the podcast. That kind of way.
Sorry, what?
What?
Everything the listener has heard so far in this podcast, we haven't actually said yet.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
All right, see.
are you just ruining the magic of how this works?
This is how the sausage is made, yeah.
I'm slightly embarrassed. I went over my head first time you said it.
I got three blank faces looking back at me. I was like, am I not supposed to have said that? Or, well, I don't know. You can call it out if not.
I think we can let people in on a little bit of how the sausage is made. But this week, before we pull in a member, we're still going to have our regular Weekly Pain segment. So we've got three questions and a big point on the line. Let me see if I can find them. Here we go.
Where have you put them now? how many tabs do you have
it's
open?
It's a big internet, Johnny.
I have a lot of tabs open.
There we go.
All right, question number one is just your classic categories type question. You need to give me the winner of Lombardia in the last 10 years. A winner of Lombardia in the last 10 years. And we will start with Kit.
First one that popped into my head was Chavez.
Oh.
Correct. 2016. I that may have been a strategic error in that. I think that's one of the harder ones. You want to knock off those easy hits.
Yeah, that was definitely a strategic error. Yeah, thinking about it, but I just, yeah.
Ronan?
Nibali?
Nibali, yep. 2017 and 2015. Johnny?
I'm going to go for Pino.
2018, correct. Back to Kit. This is impressive.
Has Roglic won it already? Johnny's making a face like he hasn't. No.
Yeah. Kid is out. Ronan.
Pogacar.
Pogacar won the last 2 years, 2022, 2021. Correct, Johnny. There's not many left.
I'm going to have to go for a guess.
Four left.
I'm going to go for... I think this is going to be wrong. Philippe Gilbert?
Incorrect.
Yeah, he'd won it before 2013. That's what I was thinking as well.
Yeah. Who else is there?
Fuglsang.
Ugh. What happened to him?
2020, Jakob Fuglsang. Ronan gets the point. Congratulations.
Everybody else was allowed to train outdoors again, and so he lost his advantage after his lockdown.
All right, round two. Well done, Ronan, for taking the point.
Is there any we missed?
I've already closed the tab. Oh. Rodriguez. There was one or two others that I no longer remember. We're going to move on, though. Another game of categories. This is races that Tadej Pogacar won in 2023. And we'll start with Kit again, because I think that is an advantage. And you were the first one out last time.
Out of my own poor tactics. Mm. Tour of Flanders.
Yes.
Kaylee's looking at you don't know the answer to you. Like, where in
He's
the
page
is
He's already lost
this?
The tab.
No, sorry, I was just deciding whether I needed to sneeze or not. Yes, he won the Tour of Flanders in 2023. Johnny.
I'm going to go with Tirreno Adriatico.
Nope, he wasn't there.
Oh.
Johnny's out. Yep, he... He was at the other race around the same time. Ronan.
Pyrenees.
I was like, how am I going to say this without...
Did he win it?
No, it was going to be the one I would say anyway.
He did win Pyrenees. I'll add a little addition to this, which is that if you know that he won a stage at a stage race, you can just mention the stage race and we'll count that.
Mm.
All right. So, Kit.
Does it...
Pyrenees is now scratched off, unfortunately. He did win three stages in addition to winning the overall.
I don't know.
Wait, so you can just go for stages?
Yeah, that's done Johnny dirty, I think.
Well, no, I was just saying, Kit, go for it so that Ronan doesn't get the 3 points.
So your caveat, Kaylee, if he's won a stage at a race but not the overall...
Then that counts.
Okay. Tour de France.
Tour de France counts. Ronan, I have done Johnny dirty here. I apologize.
You've done me dirty also, because I was about to say the Tour. Young Riders classification at the Tour?
No.
Get out of here.
No.
What?
No, the tour is now done. We've said the Tour. If you won anything within a bicycle race, you just say the bicycle race, and that's now scratched off. Of course, he won stage 6 and stage 20 of the Tour de France.
Did he win the... Oh, no. Does Kev have to get one right now?
No.
Or has she done it?
Ronan has a guess yet.
Youth. Oh, Ronan gets a guess.
That doesn't count. This game is going really well.
Yeah.
He is Slovenian national champion, so he won the Slovenian championships.
There you go. Back to Kit.
Oh. Can I have, if he got the road national championships, can I have the TT?
Yes, you can.
That was a strategic
back
error.
Back to running.
Amstel?
He did win Amstel. Back to you, Kit.
Flesh Wallon.
He did win Flesh. He's a very good bike racer, everybody. back to you, Ronan. We're not even through this yet. There's a couple more options here.
He won Dwars Door, but that was last year.
Yep.
I'm now thinking in terms of tech.
So I think there are two options left. Yep. Two races left. One was a one day.
He won his very first race of the season, which was a one day. But I can't remember the name of it.
Three.
Somebody, you have to give me some sort of a point for knowing that he won his first race of the season in Spain. The Spanish Strada Bianchi, which you have called it. You've called it the Spanish Strada Bianchi. That is, I deserve half a point for that.
What do we think? Does Ronan get any points for that? Well, it's not over yet, technically.
No, but is that not? Has he not?
Ronan, you are out. You're out. Yeah. Kit, you got to give me one.
I'm not sure about this at all. He might not even have been there, but I'm thinking Basque Country.
Oh.
Yeah.
When did he win?
No points for anybody.
When did he win Strada Bianca?
He hasn't won.
No, he didn't win. He didn't win. Strada. He won the Spanish Strada.
Strada Bianca this year is pitch.
High-end Paraíso Interior.
Oh, that's what I'm thinking of. God, there's too many races.
Yep, is the race that you're thinking of. And then
what was it?
We're maybe high-end Paraíso.
I mean, between that and
Andalucía Ruta Ciclista del Sol.
I was thinking, I knew it was a Spanish stage race. I knew it wasn't Burgos because that's where Vingegaard won everything.
Yeah, so he won three stages in the overall at Ruta del Sol. He won high-end Paraíso, which is the, as you say, Ronan, the Spanish Strada Bianca.
I feel robbed. Between that and the youth classification of the Tour, I deserved like 0.1 of a point or something there.
I hope we bring this same
energy.
I think
we all should have done better with that.
We have the members on. Just like borderline falling out with them when there's a bit of a...
Yeah.
Well, we only have two quiz questions today. So our champion.
There we go.
Congratulations.
Well done, Ryan.
Johnny, I'm delighted. I'm more delighted about the fact that I got the point when you didn't want me to than actually that I won.
There are no gifts in Weekly Pain.
So that brings us to Ronan. That is your first win.
First overall win. I've won stages.
First overall win. Yep, you're a previous stage winner, but first overall win, which brings you to 4 points. The current standings, Johnny still in the lead with 7, followed by Kit with 5, Dane and Ronan tied with 4. Ian, who we haven't had on the podcast in about a month, has 1. And next week, you, membership, somebody out there, some listener out there, is going to join us and see if you can defeat this crack squad of trivia, cycling trivia experts that we've got.
We can't promise we'll be on our best behavior, but we'll try.
A varying quality. I thought Pogacar had won Strada Bianca. We'll make a fancy new leaderboard. Mm-hmm. It'll be great.
Very important. Well, I think that's it from us this week. Thanks, of course, everybody for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back next week with another episode of Placeholders.
He did win Strada last year, didn't he?
He did.
No, I've just checked it.
Oh, yeah, of course he won with this stupid solo attack about 100 kilometers ago.
Stupid solo attack.
Right.
I'm ending the podcast. We'll see y'all next week. Bye-bye.